previously on Worlds Away.
Dr. Baliva, is there a way for you to reroute the signal so that it looks like it's coming from Satis?
Easy.
Okay, excellent. Let's do this. Patch me in.
I was beginning to think the Republic was content on letting dozens of its citizens die.
Adam, we are complying with your demands. If you check the scanners, you'll see a ship inbound from Satis. That ship will intercept the meteor and also has the supplies needed for yourselves and the hostages.
I think go ahead and roll manipulate.
And I get advantage.
And you can do it with advantage because of Mara's help.
Oh, that's a 4.
Ooh, you have no plus on that at all.
That is a plus 0.
I love the disappointment in my SM's tone.
You're in no position to dictate terms, not until you stop the asteroid. Until then, we have nothing to speak about.
I think there's a little box that pops up that says incoming communication information and has a bunch of lines of code and text. And I think we see the person there holding their hand up to call someone over to the screen.
Uh-oh.
And that is what happens off camera.
Well, there goes the element of surprise.
We should still make landfall. We should still proceed with our end of the mission, but we should instruct the ship from Satis to make double time.
Can I have my jacket back?
Oh, it's very comfortable. Are they all like this?
Arno, Mara, Leela, Nasir, can you read me?
Copy.
You'll want to head northeast from your current position, about 40 degrees on your compass. Should be your best shot at getting to the old access tunnel.
Understood. Thank you, Doctor.
You notice that those two creatures, the sort of gliding bird-like creatures, they're no longer at their perch or visible.
Uh-oh. Mm.
Love that.
Probably just tucked in for the night, right?
Mara, I want you to go ahead and roll plus calculating, but do it with advantage because you have the scanner and you prepped this.
I did, didn't I? Mike, you couldn't have made it like a little bird? It had to be like a big...
Not after Lauren stole my crabs.
7, 8, 9. That's 10. A 9.
A 9. Okay.
Something is approaching us very quickly. We need to find cover now.
But at the end of this cloud trail, sort of barreling down, you can see a red-orange shape colored as if to blend in with the tinted sky of this planet. And along its arms, which each end in a set of 4 hooked claws, are a pair of glider bat-like wings. And they are currently swept back as this creature dives down to the 4 of you. Welcome to World's Way, an actual play storytelling podcast. I'm your game master, John Ossip, and with me today, we've got Haley Daria.
Hello.
Lauren Wilbanks.
Flem Flam.
Michael Morales.
Greetings and salutations.
And Moshadara.
Go birds.
Gross. Absolutely disgusting.
Are there birds near you? Where are they trying to...
Birds aren't real.
Get out of here? Shoo birds?
Go away, birds.
So speaking of birds... When we last left off here...
Oh, no.
Oh, fuck.
How did Mo come up with the perfect segue?
Of course I did. You guys so underestimate my openers.
I feel like I estimate them. I don't think I underestimate them.
No. Mo's giving himself too much credit. He's wearing an Eagles jersey right now.
Right.
That's all that was.
God. This is fully intentional. I plan my openers. I put a lot of time and effort into thinking
this
about
this. This is going to be so sad when this airs in fucking January, and I'm just going to be upset.
When your good friend is just so delusional, and you know that he's so lost in the sauce, you can't help him.
Mo, you can lie to our listeners, but don't gaslight me. I've known you for years.
I have shown you all the list of openers before. This is ridiculous.
No, you haven't.
No, you haven't.
This is the first time you've mentioned a list.
It's not. No, I've mentioned it on mic before.
Play back the tape.
All right, we're bringing it in. Mara, you had just detected with your sensors a large alien creature swooping down toward you from the sky. And as the four of you started to scramble, we saw it break through the cloud cover a few hundred feet above you. The creature was about 20 feet long with leathery skin and wings, almost like a bat. And it is currently diving toward the four of you with some hooked claws outstretched. Now, given your success on the roll last session and the fact that you set this up a bit in advance with your sensor, I think that the four of you notice this and have time to act first and to try to either escape this thing or to be in an advantageous position to fight it. And I think last session you had suggested trying to find some cover and to get out of the open, but I think there are a lot of different ways you could approach this. Now, whatever you decide, I want to know how each of you is helping with that effort. And it could just be trying to run as fast as you can. It could be trying to make a distraction or maybe something more confrontational looking at you, Arno. But whatever you decide, we'll roll that move and sort of treat this like a skill challenge in some other unnamed game systems. And if you get at least two successes, that will mean that you achieve your goal. And otherwise, you're going to be stuck in a more direct fight with this thing. So I want to hear what everyone's sort of game plan is and what they're doing to facilitate that effort.
Yeah, I'm thinking about directly confronting it with the challenge of having to chase after somebody running away. So that's the plan, is to find some caves to hide in. Mm-hmm. I think best to avoid the fight against this thing, if at all possible.
Got it.
And I think what I want to do is find a couple of caves that are close to each other, so it might have to guess at where we went and keep it distracted.
Okay. That feels like a first move, maybe, of the group. Does anybody have any objection to that game plan, though? Or is thinking about doing anything else?
I like running away.
Yeah, I think running away makes the most sense here.
So in that case, Mike, I think I want you to roll for this. That said, there are kind of two moves that I think could work here. Scope it out makes a lot of sense to me, and so maybe that's where I'm leaning, but I would also accept arguments for act quick, just given the kind of time pressure on the situation. But I don't know if you have a dog in that fight or a preference between the two.
Oh, I have a strong preference for scope it out.
Okay. I think that makes the most sense to me anyways, so go ahead and roll plus calculating, and we will see what you notice about the environment. Oh, wow. That's a big roll, though.
Oh, all right. That's a 12.
Good job.
Boom. All right. So on a scoped out full success. So first off, I'm going to say that this helps you out. And I think there could be some more help for the rest of the party here. But you get to ask three questions from the list and sort of running through those options. That's where's my best escape route, way in or way past? What should I be on the lookout for? What's my enemy's true position? Mm. Who or what here is not what they seem? Who's really in control here? How could I best end this quickly? Or who or what here could be a useful opportunity?
What's my best way in, way past? Okay. What's a useful opportunity? Mm-hmm. And how can I end this quickly?
Okay. So I think I have a couple overlapping answers for those. So I'm going to sort of give you those and present them in response to all the questions. So in terms of best escape route, way in or way past, I think this also counts as part of the useful opportunity and maybe even how to best end this quickly. I think you notice that about 100 feet sort of forward and to the left of your current position, there is a cluster of three cave entrances sort of spread out throughout the side of the valley below where you saw those hopping bird-like creatures that you described last session, Mike, where those creatures have since fled from. Those caves, I think they kind of appear to be branching out into different directions. And so I think that if you were able to make it into those, it might be difficult to keep track of where you went into the cliff wall. That said, I think another thing that you notice is you look back over your shoulder at this creature diving toward you. And I think that you notice it's angled itself to keep a very slim kind of aerodynamic profile. And it looks like it's kind of protecting its underside a bit. And, you know, you had described some of those back armored creatures earlier. And so it seems like in combination with the pouncing bird creatures you described, maybe everything on this planet or a lot of things is concerned of attacks from above. And so I think that if some of the party went in one direction or some of the party went in another direction, you might have a very advantageous shot on a weak portion of this thing. And so maybe that's another way to end this quickly or a useful opportunity. You know, I don't think that you have to do that, right? But if things go sort of south, that might be a way to fight back more effectively.
Okay, can I take out my shotgun, having seen that now? Is that all right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Okay, so I'll take out my shotgun, and I will tell the rest of the party, head towards those caves, make it look like we're splitting up.
All right. What are the rest of you doing?
Booking it.
Is anyone doing anything other than just running as fast as possible?
Well, he said to make it look like we split up. So is there a way to, like, run somewhere and then, like, double back out of sight to the caves?
I think that's totally an option.
I think that's what I would do is, like, if I hear try to split up, I'm going to try to run in a different direction than other folks.
Okay.
And see if I can, like, find cover and double back.
I will do that also, except I have my invisibility cloak.
Oh,
so
okay.
I can run in a different direction and even distract it a little bit or something. And I'm not angling to, like, put myself in danger here. I am just saying that I do have the invisibility cloak.
Got it. All right. So, Lauren, it sounds like you just want to run straight to the cave. Is that correct?
Brave Lady Mara. She ran away.
Yeah. And then, Asir, you want to do a kind of loop back move and find some cover to sort of make your way back to the cave. And Leela, you want to activate your invisibility. What was it again? The
tactical
cloak. Okay. So I see at least Mara and Asir. It seems to me like act quick is the move. If someone has a playbook move, though, that works here, I would say let me know. And then Haley, I think that the tactical cloak has a specific thing, which is rolling act quick at advantage. So unless anyone has anything else, I think do all of those at the same time, and then we'll kind of see how this shakes out.
Okay. Give me 1 second to add it to my gear and all that shit.
Oh, yeah. Do check off that additional gear slot, too.
All right. I'm ready.
All right. 3, 2, 1, roll. A 10. Wow, look at us. Look at us.
So I'm counting a 10 for Mara. So that's a full success. A 9 for Leela and a 7 for Nasir.
Incorrect. I roll with a +3. I'm at a 10.
Oh, excellent. All right, a 10 for Nasir.
So you both had full successes. I had a partial success.
So I think what happens is as you start running, though, and I'm going to let you all kind of narrate some additional parts of this, I think you hear through the suit comms, and this is to all four of you, Danica Stone on the radio. And she says,
"What's happening? Did you see something out there?"
I think Mara responds and kind of reiterates the bare essentials of, like, what's descending upon us. So, like, large avian predator descending on us. We're seeking cover.
So I think she hears that, and you kind of hear a increase in the intensity in her voice. And she says,
"It's probably a wyvern, biggest thing that can move through the sky out here. It can see in the infrared spectrum, essentially hunts using heat vision. You've definitely got to get out of the open, get somewhere it can't follow you."
And then now I am going to turn it over to Mo to maybe describe how you're moving to lure this thing away from the rest of the group.
I think as soon as Arno says, "Get to the caves and split up," I, like, my eyes will dart to the caves, and then they'll just pan to whatever the nearest thing that provides cover is.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm also probably, like, running towards an animal of some kind, like the herbivores I mentioned earlier.
Yeah. Okay.
I probably, like, catch where they're, like, some of them are hiding, and I start running in that direction.
I think you're seeing them kind of scatter all throughout this area. So I think that they're noticed this creature also, but maybe you pick a pair and you're following them. And then are you doing anything to kind of make a particular scene out of this, or are you just trying to duck down once you've gotten a fair distance away from the cave entrance?
So we're in our vac suits, right?
Yes.
I want to look for the nearest water source. If there is like even like, you know, because we're near a cave system or whatever, but theoretically the vac suits have some amount of oxygen. In fact, they are creating environment for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like, I would want to run towards a water source and dive into it and like go down for a little while and hide.
I think we had described this space as very dry is the only thing.
Right.
I think that you notice something that looks like it could have liquid in it or water, but it's very shallow and very muddy. So I will just say it's going to be a bit gross if you dive into that.
Yeah, but I think the purpose is for me to make a splash.
Okay, so, fair enough.
I think that's what I'm going to do.
All right, I like it. Mara, you on the other hand, I think you just book it to the cave entrance, and you're just sort of running as quickly as you can and as efficiently as you can. And you get there, and maybe you're standing in the cave entrance in a way that lets you look back and kind of survey the scene unfolding outside the cave. At this point, though, Leela, so you got a mixed success. And I need you to choose one from the list. So either you are off balance or rushed and you have disadvantage going forward. You've left something behind, I'll tell you what. Or you're pushed to your limits with the effort and you suffer a stress.
I think I am off balance or rushed and that I have disadvantage going forward.
Okay. So go ahead and add another die to the list. I think that you're able to just sort of flip on the cloak and then moving quickly, and maybe you're a little out of breath in how fast you ran, but you also get to the cave entrance. What does it look like as Mara is standing there and the tactical cloaked Leela also sort of appears in the cave entrance?
I mean, I think maybe Mara might detect a little bit of a blur or kind of a distortion. And then when she blinks and kind of looks again, she sees Leela kind of pulling the cloak off of herself. And so Leela kind of materializes next to her.
I definitely think Mara is surprised, but I think that she also says, Danica warned us that this bird hunts with infrared vision. I'm not 100% sure that the invisibility cloak... tactical cloak would absolutely hide you from its perception.
I think Leela will shrug and just say, well, I hope Nasir's distraction is sufficient.
All right. So I think, Nasir, we see you kind of sprinting toward this pool of mud in the sort of 60 feet from the entrance to the cave. But Arno, you're standing there and you have the shotgun. What's your game plan now?
Before, when we were trekking, I was at the back of the group. I think it's safe to say that I'm still at the back of the group, sort of just like watching everybody else. What I want to do is, while I'm making my way towards the caves, keep my eye on this predator and see if I can get an opportunity for a shot to ward it off. So if I can't, I'm just going to go into the cave. And if I can, then I want to take that shot. And if it's a situation wherein, like, there's an opportunity, but I need to, like, maybe not run in a direct path to take it, then I think I'd rather do that as well. I'm not trying to, like, kill the thing, but I would like to ward it off.
Okay. I think that that makes sense. I'll kind of lay this out this way. I think you have the opportunity to take a shot. And I think what's happening is, Nasir, since you're the only one that didn't make it to the cave entrance and you're the one that's most in the open, the creature seems most interested in you. And you're sort of sprinting toward this puddle of mud several dozen feet from the cave entrance. And because of the angles that you're standing at, the creature has to kind of turn its back toward Arno to follow you. I will say that you've all already succeeded on enough rolls to make it to the cave. I think that said, if the point is you want to ward it off and get some additional advantage or position that way, I would totally allow that. But you are opening yourself up to some risk of this encounter continuing a little bit longer if you fail. That said, I think that you get to take an alpha strike because of Nasir setting up this position for you. So
I'll take that.
All right. In that case, I think go ahead and roll and we'll see what happens.
And that's volatile?
It is calculating, actually.
Is there a way for me to not take the alpha strike and instead go for a volatile roll?
I think if that's the case, then you're just going to be in a more direct confrontation with this creature. I just think at the point is that you want to get an angle on it and sort of get it when it's distracted. That's alpha strike. Yeah. If you want to be the distraction, that's firefight.
Also, for what it's worth, we are just trying to get away, right? Like you and we've succeeded at that. Like, you don't have to shoot it.
You make a good point.
I'd also like allow you, if the point is that you want to kind of like shoot up in the air to get it off Nasir or something like that, I would totally allow you to do that without rolling. I think the point just being, if you want to have this added effect of getting it away from you, that's gonna take an additional move.
I think I'll just take that option, John. I think I'll just like shoot up in the air and
okay. So I think maybe what you do, the way this looks, is you shoot up in the air, and then Nasir, you dive into the pool, and it's kind of a, it's not a splash like you're diving into water. It is a thunk as you land in this pretty viscous mud and are kind of just covered in it. And I think your visor is kind of completely covered, but this has put you out of sight of this creature, who turns back to Arno. Do you just sprint toward the cave at this point, or what's your next move, Mike?
Yeah, I think I'm sprinting towards the cave.
Okay. And I think, Nasir, you notice this. Maybe you wipe off the edge of your visor. And do you want to sort of sneak to the cave, or are you trying to do anything else at this point?
Well, hold on. I have a question for you. Before I head to the cave, is there any of the wildlife anywhere near me?
That's up to you. What do you think?
So I think I probably spotted this mud because I saw a creature like roll in it and then like lay near it so it would obscure itself from vision.
Yeah.
And I think I probably like my best approximation of an army crawl like across the puddle, which I'm imagining is shallow, but almost like crater sized, if that makes sense, like in that sort of like shape. And if the creature isn't hostile, which I don't think it would be, I might just reach out and pet it a little bit.
Huh.
I think they're adorable. But I just think, thank you. And then, like, I will, like, crawl away until I'm, like, relatively positive it's not looking at me. And then I will stand up and I will make it towards the cave.
I think that when you do that, if I can just add a response from the environment, I think that this is a very stressful situation for this creature. And I think you go and pet it. It does recoil a bit when you touch it, right? I think it's afraid of the situation and doesn't know how to respond to you. But I think, you know, it doesn't react any more than that. And I think you're able to sprint away. I think you get to the mouth of the cave. And I think the sight from inside it is we see Nasir kind of round the corner. And what Leela and Mara see is him completely covered in thick red-brown mud on the front of his body. What color were the vac suits before? Were they white spacesuits, or what do we think they looked like before this happened? I realize we never really described that.
I was imagining them kind of blue, like a darker blue.
Yeah, I think, was Mike's like forest green or like carbon steel black?
It was carbon. It was like a carbon fiber.
Yeah.
So I think that, yeah, if yours are like this blue again, his is kind of now a brown red, except for parts where it's dripped off. And I think in the background, we see Arno running with the creature in tow behind him. What do you all do or say in response to this sight?
If the bird is still in play, I don't think we have a lot of time to really react to Mo's predicament. I think Mara's just like, come on, let's move further into the cave.
So I think that Arno, you kind of run, and I don't know if you dive, but you just sort of sprint full bore into the mouth of the cave, and we see the creature flare its wings and sort of pull up at the last second, because there's no way that it would fit wings outstretched into this entrance. And I think you hear kind of gusts and maybe even feel them through your suit as these bat-like wings flap. But as you said, the gravity on this planet is high, and I don't think that things are really designed to gain altitude so much as to soar. And so I think it's sort of struggling, and you're feeling pretty significant gusts as it tries to pull back and gain a little bit of altitude, but you're able to move into the cave a bit.
I think as we move in and the situation kind of starts to calm down a little bit, I think Leela will turn to Nasir and say, so was it time for a spa day?
Interesting. I seem to recall I reacted appropriately and created an opening for you to make it to the cave. And I will brush the mud off as best as I can.
Excellent. And you still do hear the flaps outside. Maybe they're growing a little bit distant. And I think you can kind of hear the same very low-pitched screech that you heard at the end of the last episode. But I think looking at the cave, it is quite dark. And that's especially true as you take a few steps in and move around a slight curve and away from this opening to the valley. But as your eyes adjust, I think you start to see a very faint glow from the walls of the cave itself. And it seems to be getting a little bit brighter as you move further and further into the cave. I'm going to turn back to the cave and what we see there in a bit. But before I do that, I think you're again interrupted by a call on the comms. Though now with you in this cave, I think you're struggling to make out the words a bit through the static. But I think you can kind of hear maybe there's some tuning happening, but you can hear.
Leela, Arno, Mara, Nasir, what happened? The image went dark. Can you still read me?
We copy. We made it into the caves and are proceeding.
Oh, okay. The wyver, is it still out there?
Probably.
Wyverns will wait for their prey, sometimes for a few hours. Your suits, though.
And she sort of trails off and pauses for a second. But then you hear,
if you just hang tight there, I could lure it away, get this thing off your back.
I think Leela's going to make sure her mic is not on to the channel with Danica. And she's just going to talk to the other three and say, so our options are stay put here indefinitely or put Dr. Stone at risk.
I am going to turn my light on, like a flashlight on, and look deeper into the cave. Is this not a cave system?
I think you see it goes further back, but it's not clear where it goes at this point. I think there's a lot of turns that make it difficult to follow where this cave is going. And I think we had described this as kind of a valley that used to have water in it, maybe thousands or millions of years ago. And it seems like these caves are sort of underwater waterways that were sort of carved into the rock here.
I think that Mara will respond to Danica.
Okay.
Dr. Stone, are you suggesting leaving the Valiant?
Yes, there's nowhere closer to land. I have to do this on foot.
Dr. Stone, I strongly advise against it. Your advice was instrumental in saving our lives.
I think
we need you on the Valiant.
You. I think she interrupts you and says,
look, there's no more time. I'll be there as soon as I can.
And then you hear the sound of comms disconnecting.
I'm going to patch to Captain Alba.
Okay, good.
Captain, you need to detain her immediately. She is not to leave the Valiant. Like, we discussed this before we left. We are not letting her off the ship.
So I think you hear Captain Alba uncharacteristically say, shit. And then you hear something maybe like drop out of her hands and hear footsteps. The next thing that you hear, though, is the sound of a hand pounding. And you hear Captain Alba say, she's already in the airlock. I can connect you to the comms in there, but I can't open the door from this side now that she's already in.
Cassandra, can you seal the airlock immediately?
I'm sorry, Nasir. The airlock is always designed to open outside of the ship to allow for escape. I cannot seal it once somebody is inside.
I didn't want to have to do this. Cassandra, execute backup plan Alpha. And so I'm going to use my plans within plans.
You. Oh, fuck yeah.
And so I think what I want is that I rigged the vac suits to not in any way that's going to harm her, but to
like mag lock in place.
Yeah, either like shut down, not fill with air in a way that she knows like she can't go outside, or goes outside and it slowly peters off to the point where she'll just like pass out gently. So that's what I want to do. But of course, I need to roll plus calculating.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm employing, you have a trap set and wait for the perfect moment here. I think that's pretty trappish.
Excellent.
Trap Queen Mara.
Go ahead and roll.
Okay, that's right. A 12.
Fuck yeah.
She did it, Reddit.
All right, yeah. So I think on a 10 plus, your plan is as described and will help you. So you have the trap set up and wait for the perfect moment. So I think like to give this the maximum effect, I think it works before she gets outside the ship. I don't want to put her in a precarious situation. I assume that was your...
I agree. I totally agree. I was like, here's all of the ways like it could have gone down, and here's the one I want the most. And, you know, yeah. on a 7 to 9.
I mean, do we think it's just that it's like, oh, you made it so that the boots won't go on or something like that? Is it something kind of basic? What do we think the effect of this is?
I think that it's just like you put the suit on, right? And then you press a button or you give it a command to like actively start filling with oxygen. And it's like, won't interact with the tank properly or something along those lines.
Yeah. So I think maybe it's just we see her putting on the suit and she goes and presses the button to power it on. And then it's like alpha protocol activated on the heads up display on her visor. And she's just like, God damn it. And is just hitting the door to the outside of the Valiant.
I think Mara kind of puts a cherry on the situation by saying, she should count her lucky stars. I didn't have to execute Gamma.
Ha! Dr. Stone, you're not getting off the ship. We made that very clear when we agreed to bring you.
I can see that now.
We need your help in order to save the people on that base. Are you going to cooperate in a way that will allow us to save the people? Or are you going to continue to attempt to interfere and waste our time trying to keep you safe?
I think there's a long pause. As John thinks of what to say. No.
Retweet.
I think there's a long pause. And then I think she says,
I will help, but you're running out of time. If you wait this thing out, any other complication could cost you your lives. You understand that, right?
We understand. Now, I appreciate your cooperation. Does any of the research data you or your colleagues accumulated on this planet include a topographical map of the cave systems?
There was some work done early in the expedition, nothing extremely detailed, but enough to give you a general sense. Why, what are you thinking?
If we can't leave the cave system, we go deeper in.
That might be safer, but it will still take time, and time's working against you.
Then we best move quickly.
So I think that's the scene. On your suits, I think you see kind of this preliminary data from the topographical maps that Dr. Stone and the research team was able to provide. I think what they show is it's a very winding cave system. I think there's a lot of dead ends and a lot of interconnection between different passageways. But sort of going back to any of the three that you saw, the three openings on the side of the valley are not going to help if this creature is sort of holding camp right outside. But I think you're able to chart a rough path to another opening. It's going to be tight. You'll have to kind of squeeze through one by one. But an opening that's near to the entrance of the access tunnel on the other side of this valley. So I think you're making your way through the caves in that direction. I had mentioned the faint glow from the walls earlier, but at this point, I want to turn it back to you all and ask what we think the cave looks like. This doesn't have to be a description of creatures or anything like that, but I think in this shelter and away from the howl of the wind, maybe we're seeing a different or even softer side of Kairos in here, and I want to open it up to the group to describe that.
So what color do we think the glow is? I think that's important.
My head went to green immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go a step further than the glow, though, because I said like I turned on a light at one point to look deeper into the cave.
Mm-hmm.
Not to skip the glow, but I think this might, I want to add this, and this might be helpful in the glow conversation. I think the walls are like layers and swirls of all kinds of colors, right? Like, have you ever seen petrified wood?
Mm-hmm.
I think the surface was incredibly monochromatic, right? Like everything had this like heavy red orange wash to it.
Yeah.
The water was muddy and brown. The air had a haze to it. But I think in these tunnels, you see that the rock itself is super multicolored and multifaceted.
Are you thinking of bismuth?
I wasn't thinking of bismuth, but I kind of like bismuth. Have you ever been to Petrified Forest National Park?
I have not.
I am not sure what the Petrified Forest, from my understanding, is just like a bunch of fossils. But like, let me show you this image.
I'm looking.
They're almost like crystalline rock.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, and that's what I'm envisioning.
Okay, all right, I see the distinction. Yeah,
I don't dislike bismuth. If we prefer bismuth, we can go that way.
No,
but
no.
I think
no.
I'm thinking because of the reddish of the surface. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of like Petrified Forest. I'm thinking of Death Valley, which has multicolored sand, and that's what I'm thinking of.
So what I want to know is, John, you said these were carved by water.
I think that's the assumption, at least.
Okay, all right. The further we go into the cave, do we start to hear or see like liquid water?
I think maybe you're hearing it, but I don't think you're hearing flowing water. To the extent that there's water on the ground, it's like a trickle. But I think maybe you're hearing some dripping from the ceiling. I don't know if there's... Do we think there's like stalactites or stalagmites in here?
Yes.
Whichever one goes from the top. And I should probably know this by now in my life, but...
No, nobody actually does.
Stalactite is from the top. Stalagmite is from the bottom.
Well, you know, maybe we're seeing some of those. What do we think those look like in terms of their appearance compared to the walls?
I think the way that stalactites are made is when water is dripping with specific minerals in them. So I think they could still be kind of different colors, but I don't think it would be the same swirling kind of pattern that we see on the walls themselves.
Fuck it, mist. There's a light mist around the kind of like bottom of the cave the further that you go in.
I like that a lot.
Like if you're thinking about which Star Wars did they end up in the mouth of a space worm?
Empire.
Empire. Yeah.
There we go. Thank you. I'm a hack and a fraud.
This is if we fuck that one up, we are in so much trouble with our listeners here. So glad we got there.
To that effect, then, since there's like more moisture down here, is there more moss? And is the moss what's glowing?
Ooh.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's got that green.
And by the
glow.
Moss, do you mean like those kind of
the plant life, the foliage Haley described?
Yeah, yeah. It was sort of like a
And it like moved, right? Oh, well, the one she described was more like a cactus, like, I thought.
It is a cactus, but with a mold-like foot or, like, attachment to the surface. So, and it sort of looked like it was maybe moving at the edges.
Yeah, I think it was cacti-inspired in the spikiness of it, but it was, like, the consistency of a mold.
And maybe, like, they operate the way, like, yeast molds and some bacteria operate, where it's, like, when it's on the surface, it's, like, motile. Right, but when it's underground, it like forms like it just forms like a larger advanced like colony that stops moving.
Okay, I like that a lot.
Okay, biologist.
Anything else you want to sprinkle on this?
I mean, this already sounds magical, right? It's like it's a multicolored, almost crystalline, smooth old cave with layered stalactites and glowing moss and a thin mist. And it's like the opposite of the surface.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So I think you keep moving and maybe you get another 30 feet or so into this cave. And the passage that you're in eventually opens up into a slightly wider room. And I think we see in this room maybe there's a higher concentration of those sort of mold cactuses. Are they on every surface? Definitely, I think we see some on the ground, but there are some on the walls or the ceiling also. Or where do we kind of see them?
I think going up the walls.
They probably also kind of lump towards any trickling water source.
Yeah, yeah.
So like they're around the stalactites, kind of lumpier up there.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think the other thing that strikes you all is in this room, it's completely dark other than the glow, right? Which I think we said was coming from those spores or the pieces of the cactus moss itself or the cactus mold. And because of that, it looks like whatever this life form is, it must have some way of getting energy other than just through sunlight if it's thriving down in this cave. But we had mentioned your suit lights were on, or at least some of yours were. Who's sort of in the front, I guess, of the group?
I'm going to posit, and anyone can disagree here, I worked in the tunnel system. right? Mm. Like on Aventine, that's like actually where I worked. I think I would be very comfortable here, actually. And I think that after the glow density reached a certain point, I would turn off my light.
Okay. I think that works.
I believe that Mara is kind of maybe lagging behind because she keeps stopping to take a look at a particularly intricate pattern in the wall, or almost goes to take a sample and then is like, no, I'm not here to do that. I think she has, I'm not going to like roll and use the scanner, but I think she is kind of passively, for flavor, right? Getting little readings on what the change in the atmospheric conditions are down here, such that like this life can grow, or on the surface it struggles or has a different kind of life cycle.
So I think I'll give you something on the flavor. Yeah, go ahead, Mo. You have your hand raised.
I was just going to add, I forgot that I also have a scanner. That I bought one the last time we upgraded, but I don't think it's the Mara BioLife scanner, or like, I think it is probably whatever the most up-to-date version of the scanner I would have used on Aventine was.
Yeah, so maybe what's on your scanner, Nasir, is the sort of topographical readings, and maybe it's kind of the kind of wireframe of the cave structure in front of you, so it's kind of like radar and is, or like sonar even, and it's reflecting off the walls in some way, going down the cave to give you a sort of reading on what the cave structure in front of you looks like. And Mara, you're kind of have the scanner out and are, you know, like looking at the life forms and then detecting other stuff. I think that Mara, you notice, and this is, happens simultaneously though, this year, if you have your shoulder lights off, Mara, you notice a blip. It's only for a second. And I think it's hard to get good readings down here because of the interference of the walls and just all of the life that is sort of surrounding this cave, almost like, I think you mentioned the kind of biofilm of the cave. But Nasir, you see maybe 20 feet in front of you what looks like movement near a large rock toward the back of the room you're in. How do you react to this?
I see the movement, or
you see the movement. That said, your light, your suit light is off, and so I think it's hard to make out. You're only seeing this from the glow of the walls of the cave and of these cacti. I think you could turn your light on if you wanted to, but I just want to know how you react to that.
I think I'm going to, my instinct is to crouch down and like stop moving mostly, but to put up one hand behind me so the squad can see it to like indicate that I've seen something and folks should stop moving.
So I think Arno and Leela, you see this immediately, and Mara, maybe you're a little bit back and kind of rounding the corner with the scanner out. Arno and Leela, do you stop also, or how do you react to seeing Nasir do this?
I think I draw my gun again, just keeping it pointed forward and crouch.
The same shotgun? Or...
Mm-hmm.
Mara, I think that you kind of round the corner and then you see this scene happening in front of you.
Yeah, I guess I'll like look around wildly and then also crouch. I think I see everyone crouching like before I notice there's something to crouch about.
Yeah.
And so I think she's just waiting on to figure out what everyone's reacting to.
Yeah. And I think that you also, maybe you're in the room now, I'm not going to make you roll for this, but you just see on your scanner there are life forms in this room in addition to the cactus moss and sort of positioned behind the large rock that Nasir is looking toward. Nasir, do you do anything else at this point, or do you just kind of wait quietly for a minute?
I'm waiting quietly for a minute and observing, seeing if my like sensor picks up anything or anything becomes clearer in the glow.
Yeah, okay.
I'm mostly preparing to jump out of the way.
So I think you're just silently observing for 10, maybe 20 seconds, and it feels longer than that as you're just all kind of shallowly breathing, trying not to make any noise. But Nasir, I think that you see a sort of flat nose poke out from behind the rock for a second, and then it kind of darts back in. And then after another 15 or 20 seconds, I think you see more of a head poke out from behind the rock. And I think it's the head of one of those creatures, the herbivores with the armored back, the sort of rolling creatures that you had described last episode. I think you get the sense that it's sort of looking in your direction out of one of the eyes, which maybe they're on the kind of sides of its head, And it seems like it's sizing you up a bit in some way. What do you do?
I think a big smile pops onto my face, and I will like slowly put both of my hands up and like just sort of like stay crouched, maybe like go to a knee so that it's less of an active pose and more of a just like stable pose. And then I'll like sort of move my hands down the way you would for like a dog or a cat to indicate like I'm like not moving in an attack stance, right? Like I'm trying to be as non-threatening as possible.
So Arna, I don't think that you really got a good look at this creature, but you see Nasir acting in this way. Do you keep the gun trained, or what's your sort of next steps here?
I do. I don't know what to expect from this, and I don't think that like panicking or like taking the first action is necessarily like the best thing, and there might be more of these. So I'd like to just get a feel for what the situation actually is.
Yeah. I think another couple seconds pass, and then Nasir, you notice this creature. It kind of takes a big step forward, and it actually does a short roll out from behind the rock. It's almost like doing a single somersault, and that's like the individual degree of movement that it takes is one roll forward. Then it kind of stops again on all four legs and now is fully exposed and in the open. Though again, it's still hard to see because you don't have any suit lights on, so it's just the glow. But you can see it sort of looking up at you more fully at this point. When that happens, though, you can hear two maybe distinct sounds, and it seems like there are at least two other of these creatures behind this rock, and you can hear them kind of quietly vocalizing at this third one that rolled out toward you, and it almost sounds like a low-pitched croak, sort of like a "arrah, arrah." And it seems like the creature in front of you is choosing to ignore them, though, and actually takes a couple steps toward you. Do you do anything at this point? Or just continue to stand there with your hands outstretched or down?
I think I'm going to extend one of my hands, but keep it low to the ground, palm up.
Okay.
And just essentially like leave it there for this thing to sniff.
Okay.
I'm going to keep my shotgun trained at the space in front of Nasir's hands, and if it looks like it's going to open its mouth or take any sort of aggressive action, I'm going to shoot.
Yeah, Mara's going to come through on the mic and say, Nasir, cave creatures are not pets.
So I think what happens is you hold out your hand and it kind of just ignores that. And actually, instead of walking toward you, Nasir, it goes off at a bit of an angle, sort of from your perspective toward the right. And it stops at the foot of a rock where there is some water dripping down from the ceiling. And maybe as a result of that, there is a collection of those mold cacti sort of growing around the rock's base. And sort of continuing to ignore the other creatures, maybe one of which is now sticking its head out from behind the rock and croaking more adamantly, it uses its front feet to peel off a small lobe from one of those mold cacti. When it does that, the cactus sort of seems to grow back very quickly, like too fast for anything we would see on Earth, around that hole to seal itself up again. So maybe this is kind of a moisture preservation mechanism. So it kind of grows back around this hole where the lobe was taken off. And then using its head, you see that this creature, the sort of armored rolling creature, starts pushing or rolling this lobe of the cactus across the ground toward you, Nasir.
I think you actually hear me chuckle on the comms.
I think Lila cracks a smile and says, Nasir, I think it's giving you a gift.
I am going to like slowly reach for this cactus. We're in the vac suits. I'm going to be very careful because I don't want to. I don't suspect a thistle could like puncture a vac suit. If it could, these would be very poorly designed 200-year in the future vac suits. I do think that they have like some sort of sample collection system. And I think I'm going to like take the lobe and look at it, and I'm going to use the sample collection system to graft a large enough piece that if I had another terrarium, I could grow one of these.
Okay.
And then I'm going to slowly put the lobe back in front of it.
Mara is just aghast. She has her hands on the side of her vac suit helmet in like a scream-esque type pose. And she is just stricken at this exchange.
It was lovely meeting you, my friend, but unfortunately, we're in a bit of a hurry. I am going to slowly reach out for it and see if I can pat the thing on the head. My question to you is do I think the last one reacted that way because it doesn't like physical touch? Or do I think it reacted that way because we were in a really stressful situation?
I think it's hard to tell because it was in a really stressful situation. Like, the creature was hiding in the mud so it wouldn't get attacked from above, and then you kind of reached out to pet it, and so I don't think that, and, you know, that was a good test. I'll put it that way. So I don't think you can tell.
I think that I just won't pet this one, just in case, because this one's, I like it. And the last thing I want to do is soil this beautiful moment. So I think I am going to use my scanner to just try to I think I'm going to use the scanner to just figure out which way we should continue going.
I'm going to use my scanner in not a mechanical way at all.
Yeah.
I'm not going to roll. Don't make me roll. It's happening.
Can I assist in probably helping making like a faster decision with the scanner by using my drone? Like, maybe the topographical maps aren't perfect, right? So it's like, oh, it's one of, like, X number of paths that we want to take over here. So it's like, it can go a little deeper, a little faster, and, like, eliminate bad pathways forward. So maybe we can move through this network faster.
That's cool.
So I would totally allow all of that. I was originally thinking that you weren't going to have to roll to navigate this cave system, and there was kind of a fixed consequence the way things went down, but I'm fine kind of varying it a little bit based on this. That said, I do think one of the costs that you should keep in mind is the gear slots. So, I mean, Mike, you mentioned having the shotgun, and I think you kind of used that in the outdoor situation. So I think that's a second gear slot. And like, if it's for flavor, I'm not counting this stuff against that. But if you're using it mechanically, I think you need to check off, and that would be your last gear slot, I believe. So, I mean, either of you could use the scanner or the drone. I mean, you tell me what's happening and who wants to roll. And I think that that's the kind of consequence is the gear slot.
That's fine.
Okay. And Asir, are you doing it, like, trying to help with your scanner, or are you just, is that the flavor and Mike's using the drone to kind of survey ahead and get a faster way out?
I mean, I guess my question is we have these maps, and I was using, do I need, like, what is the benefit of me also doing this, I guess, is the question.
I think the narrative benefit is, these were pretty rough early readings, and I mentioned there was a lot of seismic activity on this planet. So it could be that openings have been blocked or new passages created since the readings were taken by the research crew, which they had said was early in the trip to the planet, or early in their presence on this planet.
Got it.
So, I mean, it sounds like, Arno, you want to send the drones out, and then, you know, Nasir, if you're trying to help, I would allow that, or if you want to do something, you know, it's up to you, or you can just let Arno straight roll, however you want to do it.
I think I'm going to let Arno roll.
Okay. All right, so Arno, go ahead and mark off that you have the drones, and then go ahead and roll plus calculating, and we'll see what happens.
That's a 9.
All right. So on a mixed success, you get one hold, and that lets you either attack a target, spend a minute or two hacking a simple system, distract the target, provide telemetry for its current location, or pick something up or manipulate a simple device. I think it's the second to last of those that makes sense here. So I think that you kind of send the drone ahead and are following the topographical map and seeing, you notice that some of the passages you thought were going to be your best route are actually now blocked by what looks like sort of rock fill, or that there was some kind of collapse in the cave structure. But there seems to be another opening that actually might provide a shortcut to your destination. I'm going to get to how this plays out in a minute, but I think as you're leaving the room, maybe you're sort of updating people on that. You see, Nasir, the other two of these creatures kind of go to the third, and maybe they're like taking up a kind of defensive position in front of it and maybe croaking at the four of you as you walk past them. Do y'all react to this anywhere? Just kind of move past?
I mean, that just seems fair.
So I think I just keep moving, like, and try to, like, stay on the opposite wall from where they're, like, make it clear, like, I'm not going near you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think you notice, though, Nasir, as you're doing that, that the third one, the one that offered you the piece of the cactus, is kind of following you with its head as you move out the back of this room and just kind of looking toward you.
I wave goodbye.
So as you're moving through the cave structure, is there any conversation, or what do we think this looks like between the four of you?
Those creatures, they seemed, well, that one seemed almost friendly, no?
Definitely friendly.
Not aggressive doesn't mean friendly.
We have capybara back on Earth, and they just don't know any predators. Maybe it's the same thing here.
They have those... What did Dr. Stone call them? Livier? They seemed pretty predatory.
We don't know if those things that we just encountered even leave this cave.
That's true. Maybe it's some sort of subterranean population. The biology here is more fascinating than I initially expected. And I think Leela kind of bows her head towards Mara, as though to say, I guess your specialty's, you know, kind of cool after all.
I think Mara has like a very grave look on her face.
In a few months, the cave creatures won't have to worry about predators at all, because they'll most likely cease to exist. Well, maybe the climate in the cave won't change drastically after the asteroid hits. But eventually, I think she just trails off.
On a cheerier note, Dr. Stone seems to be more of a handful than I think we anticipated.
Not true. I anticipated perfectly.
Pardon. more of a handful than everyone except Dr. Belova anticipated.
Well, I do recall Director Green saying something as well. She's being a little pedantic with that one. She's showing her ass a little bit.
Maybe we should have trusted the scientist regarding the other scientist. But that ship has sailed.
Perhaps, but there's a desperation about this that I don't fully understand. She's not qualified to make the situation better. And yet she insists on inserting herself into this scenario regardless.
I think Mara outright laughs.
Yeah.
I think it's just like completely inadvertent. And she stops and she gestures to the entirety of the group. And she's waiting for like Arno to pick up what she's putting down kind of wordlessly. How much Lustra hunting did you do on Earth as a part of FSOC, Lieutenant Hines?
That's classified. And I think Arno laughs before. I think Arno even offers a chuckle before you can get mad about it. However we started, we are the experts now, Dr. Belova.
That's true.
In all seriousness, Lieutenant, she has a family member in danger. This is perfectly normal behavior. I'm not saying there isn't something else going on. I'm saying that if there isn't anything else going on, that my sister is being held by intergalactic terrorists is sufficient reason to behave irrationally.
Even to just see her one last time.
Hmm. Are they wrong?
How do you mean?
What was the name of the group, John?
FIV.
That they gave us?
Yeah, FIV. The Front for an Independent Verge.
Is the FIV wrong? I'm not describing their methods. I'm not debating tactics. Is the desire to save this planet incorrect?
Is that what you think they're doing?
I think that the FIV has political machinations that go far beyond Kairos. I can't say whether or not their intentions with the planet are pure. I only mean to ask that they have posed a genuine question. Humanity has never had the ability to stop a mass extinction event like this before.
Maybe it's just because I'm cynical, but I don't see it that way. Did it have to be Kairos? Could it have been anywhere else that we've invested significant time and resources into establishing a semi-permanent settlement that would have been ripe for long-term colonization? I think the fact that we didn't want it made it a desirable target to somebody else. We were just going to let it go for nothing.
I actually don't care about the political implications of the FIV specifically. I'm perfectly fine stopping them. But I'm talking about whether or not we should stop the asteroid regardless. We can. We can stop the FIV, free the hostages, and still save the planet.
I know we can, but your question was, are they right? And I don't know if they were looking for these circumstances or for any other opportunity that gave them the opportunity to establish an independent colony in the Verge.
Then forget the FIV. Should we save this planet? Let me be more specific. I like see Mara's face when I say, should we save this planet? I assume I see Mara's face. And I say, should we prevent a mass extinction event that would wipe out a significant portion of life on this planet?
I think Leela says, the life here has immense value. But who are we to decide?
Well, let me put it differently. Would we even be asking this question if it wasn't human lives that were getting caught up in this as well?
I am. After we stop the FIV, after we've rescued the hostages, when we were walking in, Leela said that I'm sure this happens all the time. But the fact of the matter is it doesn't. Humanity has never been faced with this question before. The first time we have the ability to save countless species and stop a mass extinction event, this is it. And I'm wondering if our answer should be, when we had the ability to stop the death of countless species, we did.
When I said this happens all the time, I meant in the universe. There are thousands of asteroids that have hit thousands of planets. And with what we know, we have to assume that at least some of them had some form of life on them.
And this is the first one that we could do something about.
If an alien species defended the Earth from the asteroid that wiped out the dinosaurs, there's a strong possibility we, all of us, Homo sapiens sapiens, would not be here. We might be some sort of reptiliad. We could defend this planet from an asteroid for a few years later, a seismic event to wipe out 90% of all life, or some sort of giant cataclysmic climate shift. I don't want to call it delaying the inevitable, but Earth herself went through many population waxes and wanes.
Who's to say aliens didn't interfere?
Arno with the conspiracy theory.
You did actively mess with his mind so that he believes in
aliens. Yes, I've been waiting for this opportunity.
With the conspiracy theory that you forced him to believe.
Okay. All right. Let's entertain this.
I think we are having this conversation as we continue to move. Sorry to cut
you off.
We're not like stopped. Please continue, Lauren.
It's like, actually, you all die because you stopped. My bad.
We stopped.
And the asteroid hit.
Yeah. It's like, I have a clock and you can't see it, and it's in real world time. Sorry, y'all.
If we were on the surface, we could have seen the like slight, like the ever so slight enlargening.
Yeah.
So, Arno, you're saying that the CP extinction event was part of a grand design of an intergalactic species to usher the human race into existence. And I think she's obviously like playing with him a little bit.
Yeah. Accident design. Let's call it a consequence.
Consequence.
Sure. We interfere here. Something happens. We don't interfere here. Something happens. One way or another, it's a consequence. And to presume that we know what the consequences of our of all of our actions are is perhaps overestimating ourselves. But the point I'd mean to make is we weren't there, and there could have been a sufficiently advanced society that was also faced with a decision much like ours, and maybe we're the consequence of that. What will the consequences of our actions be?
The scale of this thing is too big to understand what our consequences will be either way. This is a planet with an ecosystem more complex than we can comprehend. Except for maybe Dr. Belova.
I think she was about to say something, but then she smiles and nods.
I do like the Nasir slowly getting in sync with the way Mara responds. But what I understand a little better is the way stories get told. This is the first time this question has been posed to humanity. And even when I was asking it here in this cave, on this planet, as it's about to go extinct, all we kept doing was referencing what's been done in the past. We're going to set a precedent, one way or the other. I think I would rather set the precedent that humanity chose to save life than to do nothing. Is that the scene?
Yeah.
I think so.
I guess, as one more question, though, if that's where the conversation ends, what do we see on the other three of your faces? Like, how do you react to Nasir ending with that?
I think Leela turns away, and she has a very conflicted look on her face.
I think Arno's eyes glaze over, and he's thinking off into the distance and wondering, what did these aliens do? Or, sorry, what did the aliens that we are dealing with do when faced with this question?
I think Mara briefly flashes back to walking the rows of what appears to be a greenhouse. And she has a physical clipboard and she's checking things off. And then behind her, you can see kind of this automated process of the plants being loaded onto a rocket ship. And I think that's where her mind is.
Hey there, it's Lauren. Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you're enjoying Worlds Away so far and you know someone who has similar refined and sophisticated tastes, please go ahead and recommend us. If you have no friends, you can also help the show by rating and reviewing us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other platform you use to listen to podcasts. Additionally, give us a shout out on whatever social media platform you swear you're going to quit this year. If you want to say hi, you can also find us on most platforms at Worlds Away Pod or online at worldsawaypod.com. Thanks again for listening. And now back to your episode.
All right. So following the map and aided by Arno's drone for navigating this cave system, I think at this point you're approaching the exit I mentioned, this sort of narrow passage that leads out back into the valley, but quite close to the entrance to the access tunnel that Dr. Stone told you about that would allow your entrance into the facility hopefully undetected. Originally, I was going to say that as a consequence of refusing your help and the delay caused by moving through the cave system, you would each have to check off another use of the vac suit. That said, I think that Arno's use of the drone and the success there accelerated your movement through this cave system. But I think there's still some risk. I don't think you're coming out of this scot-free. So instead of having all of you check off another use immediately, I just want a straight up or down luck roll of 1d6.
Oh boy.
And if it's a 4 or higher, I think you're good to go. Or if it's a 1 to 3, I think you have to check off one more use of the suit.
All right.
I had disadvantage going forward. Does that apply to this luck roll?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
It's not a move.
That's a 2 for me.
Yeah. I feel like you are the best one to get the 2. That's
2 for me.
Oh, damn.
Well, 1 6. For me.
All right, so maybe not as good as we hoped. Or no, I think you had avoided the earlier checking off of the vac suit, so I think you only have to check off one use. So maybe this is just the use of the oxygen or the air tanks navigating the planet here. For Mara and Nasir, go ahead and check off one more use. Leela, you don't have to. So, you know, if there is a situation that requires more exposure, at least I think this gives you the opportunity to have another shot at that, to do that without risking the integrity of your suit.
Fair enough.
At this point, though, I think we see a helmet pushing through an opening in rocks that are partially occluding an opening in the wall of this valley. Who's the first one out back into the valley here? Is it still Nasir or is it Arno?
I think Arno would have taken the lead here at the end.
I think you kind of pop up and maybe like far in the distance. And at this point, it's even further away than you would expect it to be from the original position. You hear another of those low-pitched screeches. At this distance, it's maybe only the sort of lowest end of it that reaches your location. Do you still have the shotgun in your hand?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe you're kind of just surveying around, looking out through your visor in this kind of tactical vac suit as the rest of you push your way up and out of this entrance. To your right, you can see the face of a very steep cliff. And this is the same cliff that when you first reached the valley, at the top of it, you saw the research station, which is your objective in this trip.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe 40 or 50 feet in front of you, you see a opening that appears to be cut into the rock. As you walk toward it and can see around the edge of this opening, the passage of this cut is maybe only 8-10 feet deep into the rock. But at the back end of it, you can see a metal door and frame. And it almost looks like it's the opening into a metal rectangle that was kind of stuffed into this rock. So it seems like the entire access tunnel, this sort of passage up to the top of this cliff, was just kind of cut and dropped into this rock structure after it was hollowed out. And you're seeing the edge of that where there's a door. Next to the door, sort of on the left side, there is a small hinged metal cover. And then on the door itself, there's also a large handle that goes diagonally across the door. It's sort of like the handles that we see on ships or submarines in our time. And so what do? Is you approach this doorway, this opening into the access tunnel.
I think my biggest concern is that I want to get into this access tunnel without alerting them.
Okay.
So that would be, and maybe this isn't like all Mara, right? But like, are there drone sentries? I know we had the whole drone discussion, but no, you know, something flying overhead looking out for us. Or, you know, if we try to open this door, what kind of access are we going to need? Do I need a hack and crack? That's my primary concern.
Go ahead and roll scope it out for me. And I think if you're using the scanner, I don't know if you used, did you check off a use of that or a gear slot for that yet? Or?
So I have used one, so I have 2 remaining. I think I'm going to go ahead and use one of those.
Yeah.
To gain advantage. Okay, that
looks
is
like a big number.
10, 11. Yeah.
All right.
Nice.
So scope it out. When you get a 10 or higher, you can ask 3 questions from the list. So let me know what you're asking.
So I guess the first one, right, could be where is my best escape route when way past. But I guess the door is right here, right, obviously. And yeah. I think Tamara's question, like, is this the best way in that fulfills her desire to not be detected?
Mm-hmm.
And then what's my enemy's true position? And what should I be on the lookout for? So very defensive kind of questions here.
And I think in answering that, maybe almost because you're asking the question, I'm going to give you some favorable answers. I think that that's the benefit of succeeding on this role, is you get some helpful information.
True.
So I think as you approach the door, you're maybe looking down at your scanner, and I think you catch a blip, and maybe it's like you flip the axis that you're looking on to be more focused on the Z dimension, given the fact that that's where the attack from this bird-like or bat-like creature came from. And I think you detect a ping that appears to be a humanoid figure at the top of the cliff, and it seems to be walking toward the edge of the cliff. What do you do in response to that?
Ooh, do I believe that this individual is within range of seeing us?
If they looked down, I think it would be, unless you kind of get cover or go up against the cliff face.
Yeah, I think I quickly tell everyone, hide. It seems like a patrol is approaching.
I do my best to hide.
Is it just one person?
I think there's only one person that's being detected on the scanner right now.
Just one so far.
And I'll just say this is like over 100 feet up from your current position.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Sorry, I thought much closer than that. Never mind. I'll just hide.
I was seeing the gears turning. I figured I would fly that for you. So maybe do you all like kind of press up? This is just for flavor, because I think you detected this. I'm not like trying to impose a consequence here. But it's like you just kind of press up against the wall.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think skinny thoughts.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe there's like a couple pebbles or something that kind of fall down as they are walking up toward the edge on top. But it seems like maybe they're looking out toward this valley. So I think that maybe this is a combination of what's your enemy's true position or what should be on the lookout for. And I'm going to give you a little bit more on the true position question in a bit. But I think that it seems like they're looking out in this direction. I'll put it that way.
Gotcha.
That said, in terms of your best way in, way past, you're like looking for drones or other sort of evidence of security, and there doesn't seem to be any focus on this door in front of you. And I think maybe you walk up and you open up that metal panel and you see a slate inside, but it is completely dead. There's no sign that this thing is getting any sort of power or has been active for, I would say, quite a long time. And in fact, I think even within this metal case, it seems like it's pretty degraded from long-term disuse and exposure to the elements.
Gotcha. Taking all of this into consideration, I think that Mara is satisfied that we can use this door without literally tripping some sort of alarm. So do we need to just open her up or...
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this big handle on it, so I think you could just turn that if you wanted to do it. Okay. And is Mara the one that does that, or does she sort of communicate this to the group in any way?
I think what she'll say is, we should probably move in before the patrol comes back around. Don't want to get spotted. And then she'll just go and open the door.
So I think you open the door, and maybe you're all moving in. I think there's the howl of the wind as you're outside in this tunnel, and maybe it's even more intense in the tunnel space because it's sort of creating a almost a wind tunnel effect. But as you get in, then you shut the door behind you. The first thing you notice is that the inside of this space is very dark. I think you need your suit lights to see anything in here in detail, but there is a dim glow coming in front of you, and I think the thing that you notice about that dim glow is it's not this diffuse appearance like the cactus moss. It is all in obviously man-made strips.
I think it's fair to say that with my suit, I don't necessarily need the light to see what's in front of me. Is that fair?
Oh, like you have some kind of night vision is what you're saying?
I think we established that in like the last arc.
Oh, did we? Hold on. I didn't recall saying that, but...
Fact check.
Let me, hold on.
Yeah, you gaslight that man.
I'm not, the thing I'm checking, Mike, is whether there's something that's like, oh, this thing provides night vision in the rules, because it, you know, no free lunch. I think it is fine for flavor. I think you just don't get any kind of mechanical advantage.
It's not that I'm looking for a mechanical advantage. It's that I don't want us to use the lights and expose our position if I can see anyway. And I just want to make sure that it's safe to turn on the lights before we do.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And Mara, I mean, Mara has the scanner, right? So I think the other source of light is the, you know, oh, and is it like, where's the display, Mara? Is it like the heads-up display? Are you getting the readout in your helmet, or are you looking at something as you're using the scanner in this environment?
I think it's the heads-up. I think Hiku could do either or, and I think right now she's got it heads-up.
Yeah. So maybe you've switched to like overlay mode, and we kind of see Arno looking around with the night vision, and you looking, and it's almost like superimposing the positions. I think that you see, at if you like look up, you see at the top of this vertical shaft, right? Maybe, Mara, you're detecting some faint signals, not even at the top of this tunnel, but I mean further into this compound or into this structure at the top. So it seems like you are detecting some movement, and I'll sort of get to that in a little bit more detail later, past whatever the exit to this space is, but you're not detecting anything in this room. And so it does seem like it's safe to turn on the lights without anyone detecting you.
So at this point, I think we should probably discuss our plan of action. And we have like a schematic. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what you see is, I mean, and let me just ask this, like in terms of describing the room, do any of you turn on your lights at this point now that you know the room is safe?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So I think what you see then, I think you see that I mentioned the kind of strips of glowing light. And I think what you notice is that is fluorescent tape. Where that is, I'll get to in just a second. But the first thing you see is at the back center of the room, there is what looks like a sort of freight elevator. And that is exposed to the room and has kind of metal fencing around it. But again, just like the slate outside, there are no lights or anything indicating that this thing has power or is currently functional. That doesn't mean that there's no way to get it working, but it just means right now it doesn't appear to be on or receiving any power. But about 10 feet in front of the lift, and that this is what you were seeing with this tape, there's a metal staircase that sort of crisscrosses the room. And that's where the fluorescent glow is, and it's marking the steps in case somebody had to navigate down these stairs without lights in the room. So kind of an emergency feature. But I will note that it looks like these stairs and really everything else in this space has been exposed to the planet's atmosphere for quite some time. And so even with that bulkhead door outside, that was not an airlock. There's still no breathable atmosphere in here. And there's some parts of the handrails and maybe other parts of the stairs that are at least somewhat corroded. And that's what you see in this room. Looking at the schematic, though, Mara, you can see that at the top of this tunnel, this access shaft, there is an airlock that leads into the smaller of the two main buildings that make up this facility. The airlock opens into a hallway that's sort of the left side of a T junction. The middle of that, if you sort of exit the door and then make a right, that leads to the station's control room, which includes the sort of controls for the environmental system, but also some controls for their comms equipment and for the orbital platform. And then if you took a left instead at the sort of center of the T junction, that would lead to the sort of sky bridge that leads to the second of these structures. And that's the larger one and is where you suspect the hostages are being held based on the video.
So I know that we saw one person on patrol, and the thing that'd be the most helpful for me right now is to figure out, like, broadly, if there are more people on patrol, where they are and what sort of frequency they kind of take those routes. I don't know if we have the time to wait, but I would very much like a watch and wait approach. And maybe we split up and try to stay out of sight so we can gather more information more quickly. But I think being able to, like, either pick them off or like avoid them and knowing where they're going to be at is sort of like the most helpful thing we can do.
So I think where you saw that patrol, right, was at the top of this cliff face outside of the compound. So whoever was out there must have been wearing a vac suit and been kind of patrolling the exterior of this area, looking out at this valley that at least Dr. Stone suspected might be an approach path to this facility. That said, I don't think there's any indication that they were focused on this access tunnel. That seems to be the part that, from Lauren's success on the role, they're not caught on to quite yet. In terms of your use of the drones, Mike, I think that you could do that in one of two ways. If you want to see what the outside looks like or what the sort of patrol frequency is, so maybe that's, oh, is there going to be a window where one of them is outside? I think you could send the drone out to look at that. Or if you wanted to use the drone in the interior of the facility, you could hold on to it and use it when you get up to the door. So I don't know which approach you wanted to take. I think there's kind of two options.
Yeah, I think I'm more interested in using it on the interior.
Okay, so maybe hold on to it until you get to the airlock. Is there any discussion happening down here before you climb up the stairs, or what does that look like?
I would say before we like start moving down, I want to see if I can open up a channel with the good doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Mo, I'm right here.
Oh, the other good doctor?
No. That is not canon.
I mean, did you still have her on comms? I think before this, you had had her kind of on active video. Maybe it cut out when you were deep in the cave system, but I don't know if you've kind of changed your approach, given that she was attempted to escape the Valiant, I guess.
I should clarify. I want to open up a private comm channel between me and the good doctor.
Oh, you and Dr. Stone? Okay.
Yes. Wow.
I think you do that.
Doctor, I think you know that we are pressed for time. If you would begin calculations on what it would take to stop the asteroid in case of a need to buy us additional time, would you be able to do that?
I think there's a second pause, and then she says,
I told you my background is in climate engineering. I'm a bit out of my depth with this, but I'll do my best, try to figure out a way to stop this thing. As I said, the only thing I can think of is using the orbital platform and its reactor to disrupt its course before it hits the planet. But I'll prepare my best calculation of an orbit to intercept it.
Thank you, Doctor. Big orbital space cannon energy.
So if you're not having any discussion now, do you head up the stairs? Or how do you intend to get to the top here?
I think up the stairs. Yeah, unless anyone disagrees.
Quickly, quietly, efficiently.
Okay. What's the order that you're walking in?
Arno has a gun drawn, right?
Yeah, I think like before the terrain and sort of like things jumping out from in front of us or on top of us was like a bit of a concern this time around. I think I'm not as worried about things popping up from behind, I guess, or behind the group. So I think I might be taking the lead.
So as you're moving up the stairs, Mara, I think you still have your sensor out. And I think what you're seeing on that display is, as you're kind of getting closer to the top, that there is occasional movement in what would correspond to the hallway outside of the airlock. But it seems sporadic, not very well organized, and the movement that you are seeing doesn't appear to go up to the door of the airlock. So at least that area seems to be relatively clear of any sort of organized patrol. I think you're also kind of scanning the stairs themselves, and in terms of what to look out for, I think the other thing is the effects of the corrosion on these stairs. Arno, if you're in the front, because Mara is scanning this, I'm going to give you advantage, but I want you to roll act quick for me.
Uh-oh.
What am I rolling? It's plus...
plus slick.
Oh, Jesus.
But he has... but you have advantage, right? Is that what you were saying?
Yes.
Here's to hoping.
Yay!
All right, we'll take that.
So that's a 10. Do you have a modifier on that? Or
I do not.
Okay. All right. So it's a 10. Still a full success. So what I think happens is maybe Mara says, wait, don't, as your foot goes forward. And I think your foot still touches the next step on the stair, but you don't put your full weight on it. And there's a kind of creaking sound and part of the metal collapses down. You hear like ka-chink, 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 and kind of like a flexing metal sound as part of the step of the stair falls down to the bottom of this long tunnel.
Uh-oh.
I think maybe you're all on edge for a second, worried about the noise, and Mara, you're just almost holding your breath, looking at the scanner readings, but you don't see any movement or any change from this. So it seems that, especially considering that there's an airlock between this structure and the rest of the facility, it doesn't seem like they've heard anything from that incident.
Shit.
Shall we continue along slightly more cautiously than before?
I think so. Or maybe even less cautiously.
Have we received has there been a point yet where we could split up?
No, not yet.
Okay.
So I think you continue up the stairs maybe a bit more cautiously. And after another 60 to 90 seconds, you reach the top of this stairwell. And that leads to a large metal lattice platform that itself narrows into a very short hallway. And you see the door of what looks like an airlock at the end of that short passageway. But as you step forward, you sort of get the whatever the oral indicator is, and maybe also see a indicator on your display of an incoming call. And as you look at that heads up display, you see that the call is coming on the same channel that Arno, you had used to call the separatists back on the Valiant when you had tried to spoof the signal as coming from another system. What do you do as you receive this call?
I think we probably haven't restored the heads up display in my vac suit since I ripped it the fuck out in
on, the video.
In the Lua system. And I answer the call, I guess.
And you do Nasir, not Arno.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is Nasir Baydok from the Minerva Project. To whom am I speaking?
I think you hear in response the same distorted voice that Arno was speaking with earlier, the one who identified himself as Adam. And I think the voice says,
"You know who I am. Is Lieutenant Hines available to speak?"
"Lieutenant Hines is currently indisposed, but I'm more than happy to negotiate on his behalf."
"You said he's indisposed. Where exactly might he be right now?"
"I'm sorry, that's classified."
"Oh my god."
"Well, I was wondering how the lieutenant was enjoying his time here in the Cairo system, as I suppose I'm wondering how you're enjoying your time here as well, Mr. Baydok."
"I'm afraid you have me confused. What exactly are you asking?"
"Personally, I'm someone who relies on simpler tools to get the job done. But one of my colleagues is very handy with computers. She tells me that the call you gave us earlier came from just above this planet. I'm curious, though, how exactly was your ship able to make it into orbit without showing up on our sensors? That's one part she wasn't able to figure out."
"I also have a colleague who is frankly incredibly gifted with technology, and she often finds complicated explanations for things. But if we're not showing up on your scanners, why exactly do you think we're in space? Above your planet?"
"As I said, that's where she detected the origin of your call. There's no use trying to continue to mislead me."
"I have a question, John."
"Mm-hmm."
Do I suspect they can trace this call to where we are right now or no?"
"I think you'd be concerned that they have the same ability to trace this call as they did the earlier one. I mean, kind of to behind the curtain, Arno failed that role, and that's why that call was detected, and there's not a role now. But other than any obscuring that the planet would provide, I mean, it might not be that they can detect your exact position, but I don't think you'd suspect there's any reason they wouldn't be able to trace this call to here on Kairos or to somewhere around Kairos. But it did take them an hour or two to make this call."
"Got it. You say there's no use in trying to deceive you, and yet I don't understand why you believe that your current scanners are incorrect, but your previous scanners were correct. I'm sitting here on a conversation with you now. If you really want to say that we're on Kairos, feel free to trace this message." "You said it would take them an hour or two, yeah?"
"No, I said that's how long it took them to call you from the last call."
"Ah, I see."
I think he says in response to that,
after she detected your masking on your previous transmission, it's not as difficult to see past your subterfuge. Even this call we know is coming from the Cairo system. It's only a matter of time before we know where exactly. So what I'm going to propose is that we cut to the chase. Earlier, Lieutenant Hines wanted to make a deal, and so I have a new offer for you. You have 30 seconds to turn off whatever is interfering with our sensor readings of your ship and to cut out whatever bullshit you're trying to pull here. Otherwise, I'm going to put a bullet right between her eyes.
And at this point, you see a video transmission come through in addition to the audio, and you see the same table that you saw in the original video, but this time there is a gun pointed at the head of Eliza Stone. What do you do?
Is this call only going to Nasir?
No.
I think you're all hearing it, and you could cut in and speak if you wanted to.
If you kill her, you destroy your only chance of stopping that asteroid. How exactly did you think we were going to divert it without coming into the system? The person heading our calculations is here to rescue Dr. Eliza Stone.
I think when you say that, you see a kind of sudden jerk in the hand holding the gun. And I think then you hear, there's like a pause for a second, and then you hear,
if you're masking your transmissions and are here in some sort of stealth ship, it's clear that your intentions aren't to resolve this peacefully. So your threats about the asteroid don't really ring true to me.
You took dozens of people hostage before even attempting to come to the negotiation table. If you think that we were going to come in here for any mission and let you put your eyes on us, guns blazing, you'd have to think we were idiots. It's odd to say that I'm being deceptive when you're the one trying to negotiate at gunpoint.
I think he's going to need more than that. I think there's going to have to be an exchange that's promised, right, to get you in a position role. So I think what he says to that is
15 seconds.
We're here to meet your demands. Lieutenant Hines already talked to you about the shipping of supplies from Satis. We're here to destroy the asteroid, and I have on the line the colleague I mentioned who happens to be a genius and can talk to you about the development of Genesynth crops for the Cairo system. Patching in Dr. Mara Belova.
Well, hello. We weren't so sure that you would warmly receive us on your planet, so we got in, got the samples that we needed, and left.
I'll send him the data from the Moss sample.
Okay. I think at this point, I want you to go ahead and roll manipulate, unless you have a better move for this. I don't think it's of the people, I hate to tell you.
No, I agree. I'm looking at well-connected, but I don't have local connections, so that doesn't feel right, unless we're counting the little dinosaur homie.
I mean, for sure that's a connection. I just don't think the move fits here.
No, I agree.
I mean, I think it's the same modifier anyways, so.
That is seven. That is a seven.
Dude, you gotta put the...
4 plus 3 is 7. No. You gotta see it just the way it happens at the table. For those of you watching at home, I rolled a 4, but I have a plus 3. That is a 7.
Oh my god. Alright, so on a 7 to 9, they make a counteroffer to be settled now before they do what you want. Or they're gonna ask you to promise something and provide concrete assurance that you'll follow through. And then they'll do what you want. So here's what I think happens. I think there's a bit of silence as he ponders what you say. And I think then you hear a response, and it's a bit more careful. And he says,
I'm sure someone with your background is familiar with Occam's razor, the concept that the simplest solution is more likely to be true. And I'm finding it hard to believe that the simpler solution is your team of experts coming to this planet under stealth to get a biological sample while the planet is under threat from an asteroid, as opposed to your coming in here to kill all of us. But I think there's a way that you could earn my trust on this.
Go on.
So far, your president's been remarkably silent on her intentions to negotiate. If you really do intend to stop this asteroid, I want you to make a public announcement to the entire Verge right now that you intend to resolve this peacefully and will comply with our demands.
I have a question for John.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Verge know about the FIV? I thought we kept this mostly under wraps.
So where we left off, the president was making an announcement to the public, right? So I think the fact that this is happening has been announced at this point. In terms of the details, I think that's been kept pretty vague. I mean, I'll just say, I think what has happened so far is she said, like, we're working to resolve the situation with as little bloodshed as possible and sort of general statements like that. But she certainly hasn't indicated that you're intending to comply with their demands and stop the asteroid yet.
But she's announced that there was like a terrorist she read their demands, right? Like, what I want to know is, what is the current public perception? Nasir's going to do this, right? But what my words are going to be carefully picked based on what is happening.
I mean, I'm not sure that, like, in terms of what's the public perception, I'm not sure that Nasir would be in a position to know how everybody's reacting since you've been traveling to and then on this planet. In terms of what's been told, I think it's just the facts, which is that a separatist group that wants to claim Kairos for their own has taken hostages on a planet that is under threat of an asteroid impact.
So he wants me to make a statement right now?
Yeah.
How would I do that?
I think that because this planet has a transmitter, he could patch you through to that. And you may even be able to, like, get into it yourself, right? I think that was an option that Sasha Green had offered, but...
Then I will look to the rest of the group and just sort of shrug my shoulders at wondering, like, what if anyone has any, like, speak now or hold your peace.
This is killing me. This is actually killing me.
I think Leela just solemnly nods.
I will open a different channel.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Alba, can you patch me through to the transmitter so that I can make a statement to the press?
I think there's a long pause, and then I think she says, you know that if this goes south, there will be consequences. Are you sure?
I'm sure.
I think you don't hear her say anything. I think you just hear a chime of a channel opening on your comms.
I think we see me start flexing my hand in like a nervous tick, tapping tick, not unlike the way Mo taps on Mike.
Rude.
And this is Nasir Baydok of the Minerva Project and the Republic ship Valiant. We are currently in the Kairos system working to resolve the situation, both to stop the asteroid which threatens the life of the planet of Kairos, and to work to negotiate the safe return of every person on the planet's surface. And I like send that out. Presumably he would have seen it, the transmission. So I switched to him. Sufficient.
He says,
sufficient for now. But if I get even a hint that you were lying to me...
Can I interrupt?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Adam, this is no longer a negotiation. You're talking to Arno Hines. If even one of those hostages is killed, the next transmission will be offering our condolences to their families because the meteor hit and we were unable to do anything. Have a good day. And I end the transmission.